Don't worry, asshole, I said. There's nobody here. They were all arrested last week by the government. He was motionless. You understand what I said before about the question? He nodded hesitantly, awkwardly, with the gun still jammed hard in his ear. You answer it, or I'll shoot you in the head. Got it? He nodded again. Okay, here it comes. You ready? He nodded just once. Where is Teresa Daniel? There was a long pause. He turned half toward me. I tracked my hand around to keep the PSM's muzzle in place. Realization dawned slowly in his eyes. In your dreams, he said. I shot him in the head, just jerked the muzzle out of his ear, and fired once, left-handed, into his right temple. The sound was shattering in the dark. Blood and brain and bone chips hit the far wall. The muzzle flash burned his hair. Then I fired a double tap from the H&K, right-handed, into the ceiling, and fired another from the PSM, left-handed, into the floor. Switched the H&K to automatic fire and stood up and emptied it point-blank into his body. Picked up his Steyr from where it had fallen and blasted the ceiling with it again and again. 15 fast shots, bam, 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 half the magazine. The hallway was instantly full of bitter smoke and chips of wood and plaster were flying everywhere. I switched magazines on the H&K and sprayed the walls all around. The noise was deafening. Spent shell cases were spitting out and bouncing around and raining down everywhere. The H&K clicked empty, and I fired the rest of the PSM's ammo into the hallway wall and kicked open the door to the lighted room and blew up the table lamp with the Steyr. I found a side table and tossed it through the window and used up the second spare magazine for the H&K by spraying the trees in the distance while I fired the Steyr left-handed into the floor until it clicked empty. Then I piled the Steyr and the H&K and the PSM together in my arms and ran for it with my head ringing like a bell. I had fired 128 rounds in about 15 seconds. They had deafened me. They must have sounded like World War III to Beck. I ran straight down the driveway. I was coughing and trailing gun smoke like a cloud. I headed for the cars. Beck had already scrambled across into the Cadillac's driver's seat. He saw me coming and opened his door an inch, faster than using the window. Ambush, I said. I was out of breath and I could hear my own voice loud inside my head. There were at least 8 of them. Where's Duke? Dead. We gotta go right now, Beck. He froze for a second, then he moved. Take his car, he said. He already had the Cadillac rolling. He jammed his foot down and slammed his door and reversed down the driveway and out of sight. I jumped into the Lincoln, fired it up, stuck the selector in reverse and got one elbow up on the back of the seat and stared through the rear window and hit the gas. We shot out backward onto the road one after the other and slewed around and took off again north, side by side like a stoplight drag race. We howled around the curves and fought the camber and stayed up around 70 miles an hour. Didn't slow until we reached the turn that would take us back toward Hartford. Beck edged ahead of me, and I fell in behind him and followed. He drove 5 fast miles and turned in at a closed package store and parked at the back of the lot. I parked 10 feet from him and just lay back in the seat and let him come to me. I was too tired to get out. He ran around the Cadillac's hood and pulled my door open. "Use an ambush?" he said. I nodded. "They were waiting for us. 8 of them. Maybe more. It was a massacre." He said nothing. There was nothing for him to say. I picked up Duke Steyr from the seat beside me and handed it over. I recovered it.
Why?
I thought you might want me to. I thought it might be traceable. He nodded.
It isn't. But that was good thinking.
I gave him the H&K, too. He stepped back to the Cadillac, and I watched him zip both pieces into his bag. Then he turned around, clenched both hands, and looked up at the black sky, then at me.
See any faces?
I shook my head. Too dark. But we hit one of them. He dropped this. I handed him the PSM. It was like punching him in the gut. He turned pale and put out a hand and steadied himself against the Lincoln's roof. What? I said. He looked away.
I don't believe it.
What?
You hit somebody and he dropped this?
I think Duke hit him.
You saw it happen?
Just shapes. It was dark. Lots of muzzle flashes. Duke was firing, and he hit his shape, and this was on the floor when I came out.
This is Angel Dahl's gun.
You sure?
1,000,001, it isn't. You know what it is?
Never saw one like it.
It's a special KGB pistol from the old Soviet Union. Very rare in this country.
Then he stepped away into the darkness of the lot. I closed my eyes. I wanted to sleep. Even 5 seconds would have made a difference.
Reacher,
he called.
What evidence did you leave?
I opened my eyes. Duke's body.
That won't lead anybody anywhere. Ballistics?
I smiled in the dark. Imagined Hartford PD forensic scientists trying to make sense of the trajectories. Walls, floors, ceilings. They would conclude the hallway had been full of heavily armed disco dancers.
A lot of bullets and shell cases.
Untraceable, he said. He moved deeper into the dark. I closed my eyes again. I had left no fingerprints. No part of me had touched any part of the house except for the soles of my shoes. And I hadn't fired Duffy's Glock. I had heard something about a central registry somewhere that stored data on rifling marks. Maybe her Glock was a part of it, but I hadn't used it.
Reacher, drive me home.
I opened my eyes.
What about this car? Abandon it here.
I yawned and forced myself to move and used the tail of my coat to wipe the wheel and all the controls I had touched. The unused Glock nearly fell out of my pocket. Beck didn't notice. He was so preoccupied I could have taken it out and twirled it around my finger like the Sundance Kid, and he wouldn't have noticed. I wiped the door handle and then leaned in and pulled the keys and wiped them and tossed them into the scrub at the edge of the lot.
Let's go.
Beck was silent until we were 30 miles north and east of Hartford. Then he started talking. He had spent the time getting it all worked out in his mind.
The phone call yesterday? They were laying their plans. Dahl was working with them all along.
From when?
From the start. It doesn't make sense. Duke went south and got the Toyota's plate number for you. Then you gave it to Dahl and told him to trace it.
But why would Dahl tell you the truth about the trace? If they were his buddies, he'd have dead-ended it, surely. Led you away from him, left you in the dark. Beck smiled a superior smile.
No. They were setting up the ambush. That was the point of the phone call. It was good improvisation on their part. The kidnap gambit failed, so they switched tactics. They let Dahl point us in the right direction, so that what happened tonight could happen.